here.
No, Philadelphia School of Design for Women.
It wasn't
Moore College till much later.
Okay. Well, most of your paintings, Alice Neal's paintings, are portraits done in the representational style. Many of her portraits are from people from the art world, including Andy Warhol, Duane Hanson, and Linda Nochlin. Other subjects are from the year that she spent in Cuba in the early 1920s and her many years in New York and the Greenwich Village and Spanish Harlem neighborhoods that she's lived in for many years. Alice Neal has been brought to Philadelphia by the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts, where her painting of art historian Linda Nochlin and her daughter Daisy is part of the Contemporary American Realism exhibit. Well, welcome to Fresh Air, Alice. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Is there anything else about your background that...
They're the essentials.
When I've been leafing through a catalog of yours, and there are some still lifes, but most of the paintings are portraits. And what's very nice about all the portraits is the immediate connection between the person that you have on the canvas and myself when I'm looking at them. How do you get people to relate in such a way so you can capture that?
Well, that's what I want, to get something. I tell you what I want to get when I paint someone, although I hate the word portrait. Maybe just because everybody was against it for so many years. But actually what I want to get is the person, the zeitgeist, and a feeling of spontaneity. I don't like things to look dull and worked over. I like that spontaneous feeling, don't you? Yeah.
Do you find that you rearrange... No, I don't.
I'll tell you what I do. If someone comes and I'm not really familiar with them very much, I sit and talk to them about half hour. And in a half hour, they take their characteristic pose at least three or four times. And then, of course, I have one talent, and that is, I have more than one, because I also like very much to divide the canvas, because it has to be art. I despise just facsimiles of people without art. So then I talk to them, and then I see how it is they're relaxed, and then I just start painting, and I give them as many rests as they have to have, but I can be an awful... slave driver if they don't demand their rest, you know, because I get really involved in it. And then I really get the spirit of the person, not only their features. It's more than their features. It's a sense of them also.
A lot of your subjects, when you have more than one, they're holding each other in a sort of protective but open pose.
They do. That's the funny thing is, most of those people are now divorced. It's really shocking. There's Benny Andrews and Mary Ellen, they're divorced. And Red Grooms and Mimi Gross, they're divorced.
Do you paint many people from a public walk of life? I mean, Andy Warhol, for instance, or Mayor Ed Koch, whom you're doing a portrait of now.
Yeah, well, Andy Warhol, I did him 10 years ago. He's in the collection of the Whitney Museum. In fact, they reproduced me in the fine arts catalog. They reproduced the Andy Warhol.
How about doing a portrait of Ed Koch? Is he trying to present an image which might be consistent with his political
stature? No, nobody is. He's a very modest, unassuming person. The thing I got from him is that he just loves being mayor. He really is busy every minute, and he loves it. And he feels that he can help things by being mayor. He gets up at 4 in the morning to interview bag ladies. Think of that. And try to find out where they'd like to have to go at night if they had no place to sleep, you know. But he doesn't want to do it as a bureaucrat. He wants to just talk to them and see what they say, you know.
I imagine that it might be difficult to get along sitting with him on a schedule that a mayor of New York would
have. Listen, I don't have enough time. I never will have enough time. It won't be the best portrait I could do because I don't have enough time to do it in. I've only had 4.5 hours so far, and 1 hour three times. The sirens ring, and all the police come up, and then in walks Ed Koch, you know. But he's a very nice, modest person. and he sits well, but for an hour, that's not long. And then the day he came for an hour and a half, he had just walked. It was Columbus Day, and he had just walked that long march. And then he ate a big lunch, so he immediately fell asleep. And I didn't always have the heart to waken him. So it wasn't the best pose, even though it was the longest pose. But now I have to get him back because I don't have the expression on his face right yet. I have the figure there. He's posing in his shirt sleeves because he's a very democratic person, you know.
Do you fill in the expression last?
No. No, I just don't have it the way I want it yet.
Can you do the equivalent of erasing when you're doing someone's portrait?
Well, naturally,
of course
you can. Do you
get to know them better?
You can. No, it wasn't a matter of getting to know him better. I just didn't get what I want yet. That's all. I haven't had time.
Another one of your portraits is one of Joe Gould, who was a character who...
Oh, well, my God, didn't know when I painted that in 1933.
It was a nude, and in 1933...
There's two. I have a portrait and a nude also. Now, the portrait I painted because E.E. Cummings painted one of Joe Gould. E.E. Cummings, that famous poet that wrote The Enormous Room, he painted one of Joe Gould where he made him look just like Trotsky. He looks something like Trotsky, but he also looks like Uncle Sam. So I painted him as a combination of looking like Trotsky and Uncle Sam. That was the portrait. Then he wanted to be painted nude with just a cigarette holder. And that's a famous picture. I remember a man from the Whitney Museum, the director, came over in the 30s, and he told me it was a matriarchy because I had that picture of Joe Gould there.
Was that considered a little risque in 1933?
Oh, of course. I never could show it till 71. And by the time I showed it, everybody was so used to nudity, they hardly looked at it.
I read that a quote of yours... that you said that you were conditioned that the portrait was a low form of art for a while. Did the art establishment give you a hard time?
Abstract expressionism couldn't bear the sight of any human image. I mean, not a portrait or a figure or anything. It was all considered no good. So maybe that conditioned me, but then also... there's a lot of terribly stuffy portraits in the world, college professors and things like that. And I never wanted to do like that, so I used to call it figure painting rather than a portrait.
Well, did you feel at times that more, I don't know, flamboyance was expected of people in the contemporary art scene as time changed? What was expected to be current?
When?
Well, I guess through the 30s and the 40s.
Well, to begin with, art didn't have the important position then that it has now. You couldn't make a lot of money at art like Andy Warhol and people like that make. Art now is big business, but it wasn't in the 30s and 40s. In fact, in the 30s was the Depression, and the 40s, of course, was World War II. And there was art, but it wasn't on the same level as now. Now art is a very important thing. I only wish it was more important. I'd much rather the Pentagon all went to art school than making MX bombs.
You did a lot of painting from your years in Spanish Harlem and also in Havana.
Yes. I lived in Havana for about a year and a half.
Well, that was probably a very different context than going to an art school in Philadelphia.
Very different.
How did that change affect you? Did it affect you politically? Did it affect how you saw the world or what you thought was important to
paint? Well, I tell you what I found in Havana. I found a very nice art world there. For instance, they didn't make the division between writers and painters that they made in this country. They were all friends of each other. And that has happened recently here, but in the 30s it wasn't so.
What drew you to Spanish Harlem?
Well, I don't know. I lived in the Village for quite a few years. That's where I did Joe Gould. I did the Beat of those days. I did a famous translator, Sam Putnam. And, I never did Maxwell Bodenheim, although I should have. And I also should have done Carlo Tresca, that anarchist, because I knew him. But I did many people in the Village. But then the Village began to get very honky-tonk. And then I went up to Harlem. And when I went up, it was Spanish Harlem. And when I went up there, it wasn't as down at the heel as it is now. It was, I lived on 108th Street, right between Madison Avenue and Fifth, the park, Central Park, and it was really quite nice there. And then I loved all those types. I thought they had wonderful faces. I did a lot of people in Spanish Harlem.
What are your, do you have any particular strong recollections of the beat scene of those years in Greenwich Village? What stands out to you now?
Not only that, but then I was in that film Pull My Daisy in 59. That's with Allen Ginsberg and Gregory Corso. Now, that was the beat that are known as the beat. But actually, in the 30s, there were the beat, too. You see, that was 30 years before the 30s. They used to tack their poetry on a wooden fence, and they used to live a very bohemian lives, you know. And then, of course, the Depression. They didn't lead hardly any lives at all.
Did belonging to the beat scene, did that have any effect as to how you were recognized by the art establishment, by the established galleries and critics?
Well, you see, there was no big establishment like today. There were critics and there were artists, but they were much more accessible. They didn't build up these huge walls like today. Today, everything gets to be on a corporate level. Then it wasn't so much that.
One of the paintings, and I think this is from when you were living in New York, is a study of a children's care ward in New York. It's a hospital setting. Do you know which painting I'm?
Oh, is it? What's it called? Is it called the Well Baby Clinic?
That's right, the Well Baby Clinic.
Oh yeah, well that was just a clinic at a hospital. And the babies there. And what interested me was the nurses, how scrappy the people looked compared to the architecture, because the babies were all wriggling around and the people all looked messy and the architecture was so neat. But that's a very important painting.
What did you paint during your years that you were painting for the WPA?
I'll tell you what I did. I did a survey almost of the street scenes of New York. I did an awful lot of street scenes. I also did a great portrait of Audrey McMahon from memory. She just died about 2 months ago. She was the person that either fired you or hired you. So everyone was terrified of her, you know.
Did you feel that you had a free rein to choose what you wanted to do at the WPA?
Yes, you do have. And I've often lectured for new WPAs because I used to have helpers that had to do dishwashing, and it was almost impossible to do dishwashing all day and then paint at night. You know, they were exhausted. So I once even spoke at the Metropolitan Museum in favor of a WPA, and the woman that was giving this symposium said to me, "But what would we do with all those paintings?" And I said, "You wouldn't have to take so many. You could take one a year. You wouldn't have to be greedy. But you could still have a WPA. You know, if you're in Holland, you're subsidized. Also the Soviet Union. They have 17,000 in the Artists' Union, and they all get contributions toward their rent and their food. They don't die of starvation, you know."
When you were choosing what to paint for the paintings that you did for the WPA project, did you feel that there was a message that you were called on to deliver?
Yes.
What was that?
I tell you what, I think painting is several things. Painting, of course, is primarily aesthetic. Then it's also a form of history. And I thought the history of those streets and the people in them and the feelings of the people in those days was very interesting. And then in one picture I had a man reaching into a garbage can. But that was during the Depression when such things happened, you know.
I'm sort of jumping around here chronologically, but I'd be interested in what was expected of you when you were first starting out as a student in the early 1920s at the Philadelphia School of Design
for women.
Women. What was expected of a young woman who's going to pursue a career in art in that institution at that time, or in the art education?
Well, you go there in order to learn to be an artist. You expect something. Mm-hmm. You expect to be educated. And what we had to do there, we had to draw for about 6 months from these great sculptures, I tell you, they have of the Italian masterpieces that later were thrown away because Moore College wanted to be so sophisticated. Yet I was in England in 65, and I went to the, museum that has two names, Victoria Albert Museum. They had just bought a set of facsimiles of Italian sculpture that were not in it with the ones that the Philadelphia School of Design for Women had. So they threw away a treasure. But they did that for fashion.
Did you find the approach to going to school to learn how to be an artist, was that a beneficial way to start?
Oh, I loved it. Sure. I still believe in it. Well, for that matter, Picasso's father was an art teacher and gave him projects to do every day, things to draw, and then he would criticize them. So that was just really like being in an art school.
Do you have students? Do you teach?
I have, and I tell you to what extent I teach now. I take a lot of trips, and I give slide lectures, and then sometimes I stay 2 or 3 days more, and I lecture to classes. And I tell you what I tell them to do, you know. Once, for instance, they gave me an honorary doctorate at Moore College, in June 1971, and I made the commencement address, although I just made a commencement address about 3 months ago at KCAI, Kansas City Art Institute. They were a class of about 140 were graduating. But at Moore College, I told them, don't think, you see, they were all excited because it was Woman's Lib 70. And I said, being a woman will not automatically make you an artist. It's true you have more freedom now to learn to be an artist, but the only thing that will make you an artist will be hard work, because it's very demanding art, you know.
Do you think for yourself, being a woman has affected what you choose to paint and how you choose to paint it?
No, I did as I damn please, and purposely so. And when you're in a room working, you don't think about what sex you are. At least I don't. I'm not Judy Chicago. I don't think there's a woman's world and a man's world. I think we all have the same world. And I think that hard work. And then I tell them another thing, and that is to train their memories, because that makes life easier also. For one thing, I have many good pictures that I painted from memory, although I deliberately trained my memory. And then there's another thing. If you're painting a person and they keep changing the way they look or something, if you have a good memory, you remember what idea you set out with, and that helps you also.
When did you feel you started to become recognized by an official arts world, the establishment?
Well, now, I tell you, early on I had shows. I had a show on 8th Street in the 30s, and this Sam Putnam, this famous translator, I remember, wrote a foreword. Then Sam Putnam was one of the exiles that came back from Europe. There was a wonderful meeting at the Gotham Bookmark of the exiles, the writers that returned from Europe. And they all said they came back because the money relation changed. You couldn't get as many francs for a dollar. But actually the reason that may have been why they came back was the early 30s. But they were also all studying Marxism. And Sam Putnam later became a Marxist, he was a charter member of the Communist Party from 1924, but then he became active. Then in the 50s, he left, and he delivered a set of anti-communist lectures in Brazil at a very good price. But all the years he was a communist, he had such a hard life, you know.
How about your own sense of when you were recognized?
Well, I tell you, I was always recognized to a certain extent. Other artists always, you know a lot of artists, and there was the Artists Union. And then I had a show at a place called Contemporary Art, in 1937, and then I had a show at the Pinacoteca Gallery in 44, and I had several shows at the ACA Gallery, and then I got with the Graham Gallery in 63, and then in 74 I had a retrospective at the Whitney Museum. I had the whole second floor, you know. Then in 75, that catalog you have there, I had a retrospective at Georgia Museum of Fine Art in Athens, Georgia, not Atlanta, Athens.
Did it matter to you in the earlier part of your career that you weren't getting that type of notice, though? Or did you have peers that...
I was getting as much notice as anyone else. Everybody was working, and then there was the WPA, you know. Mm-hmm. After all, everybody was on the WPA. I'm going to be in a show in January at the Hirshhorn with four other people that were on the WPA when I was. Bill de Kooning, Twerkoff, Ilya Balotowski, and some sculptor, I forget his name, and me. We're going to have three pictures each at the Hirshhorn, but not of the old days, of now.
Mm-hmm. We're just about out of time, but I...
Oh, no.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I thought it was just starting.
Well, in many essays that I've read about your work, there are terms that are applied to artists, and many times you're said to have a lot of strong expressionist influences in your work.
Yes.
Are those type of terms and definitions and categories useful to you in how you think about your own work and your own art?
No, you have to figure out your own self. Don't you know what the Bible says? Know thyself. The most important thing is to find your own road. I must tell you a good quote of Cezanne's, though. He said, "I like to paint people who have grown old naturally in the country. I'm just the opposite. I like to paint people torn apart by the city and, you know, in the rat race with all the struggle that goes on."
Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, Alice Neal. Thanks very much for coming to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
I've been joined by Alice Neal, who is in town as part of the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts Contemporary American Realism exhibition. Alice Neal has a portrait at the exhibition of Linda Nochlin and Linda Nochlin's daughter Daisy.
Yes.
Called Linda Nochlin and Daisy. And we've been spending the last while on Fresh Air talking with Alice Neal. Thanks again for being here.
All right. Thank you. Your questions were great.